Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Kalinda. So, Kalinda, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you, Leticia, and thank you for having me on your show. So my name is Kalinda Latour. I'm a self-love coach, author of Living in Love, as well as a speaker. Originally from a small, tiny town in northern Canada, I now live in the UK. And basically, I'm here to spread love to 10 million people, or have love, you know, or 10 million acts of love is what I'm here to do. Yeah, and I'm all about putting love into action.
I love that. I love that. You and I have been LinkedIn buddies for a while, so I'm really excited to have you on the show. How would you describe survival mode?
That's a great question. So survival mode, I think, is very personal, right? It's going to depend on how you react to traumas or certain incidents in your life. For me, survival mode was people pleasing a lot, but also pushing myself nonstop to keep going, to keep doing better, to just continue to try and improve myself because I never felt I was good enough. And so survival mode for me was not listening to my body, not setting appropriate boundaries, and really also just being a peacekeeper to the point where I wasn't at peace. Mm-hmm. Always trying to as well be a fixer. That came up in many of my relationships, right? So not only trying to please everybody, fix everybody, keep the peace, it was exhausting. So survival mode is exhausting, I think.
Absolutely exhausting. And I was in that space for decades. So being able to come out of it and being able to set boundaries, because like you, people pleaser, fixer, I was everybody's fixer. I met you, I'm fixing you. And overachieving also was one of my survival identities, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I don't think we recognize enough the residual impacts of trauma and how it actually shows up in our lives. Because you and I probably, prior to learning about trauma, would have just thought that people pleasing and fixing was part of our personality. So now I'm curious as to your story to and through survival mode.
So, I mean, my story started before I was even born, and it was the knowledge that, and I found this out when I was about 15, 16 years old. My mom just came out and told me that she just walked the floors for weeks thinking she should abort me before I was even born, right? And so when I was born, my dad then left the family for good. I was the youngest, or I am the youngest of six kids. And my father, I learned, left after every kid, but he always came back. However, when I was born, he didn't come back. And I learned later in life that he actually abandoned his truck. Like I said, I'm from Northern Canada. He drove all the way to the West Coast, abandoned his truck with his wallet, his ID in it, and everything. He didn't want to be found. And he wasn't. I met him once when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and then he died tragically in 1989 in a gay bathhouse in Seattle. It was arson, and they never found who did it, because back then, sorry, not 1989, it was 1982, and back then it was the start of the AIDS, and nobody wanted to go into the gay village. So even though the fire chief said that this was an act of arson, it was never investigated. And I only learned that in my 30s, Letitia. Mom always told us he died in a hotel fire, and semi-accurate, but we never learned the actual fact that it was a hate crime and that the person never actually was found. So that trauma of him leaving me, and then that extended years, and the fact that it's still unsolved comes back to haunt me. I've come to grips with it through my own healing, but at the same time, that plagued me for many, many years. And then bits along the way, I mean, with my father leaving, my mother in a small, tiny Canadian northern town in, what was it, early 70s, there weren't a lot of resources. We were poverty stricken. Often didn't have our basic needs met, electricity running out, water running out, pipes freezing, heating running out. I mean, again, in the north, you have long, cold winters. I remember being huddled around, the stove and stuff, trying to heat ourselves through the propane gas with the oven on, things like that. And then, there was a lot of screaming in my house. My mom was, as she likes to say, doing the best she can, and I'm sure she was, but there was a lot of anger and bitterness from my father leaving her and leaving her destitute with all of us. And that became evident in her neglect. She gave way more to the community, and I bless her for this, as does the community. She taught us how to give back to the community, but it was at the expense of paying any attention to her children. So that was often very difficult. Long days and evenings without her. She was also a journalist, and so she was in meetings and involved herself in anything in the community that she could to help, but again, at the expense of us. And then sadly, there was other traumas within the family. My eldest brother turned to drugs and turned to becoming a dealer, was in jail before he was 21. I was the young age of 12. And, on top of that, my sister, also 6 or so years older than me, ran away when she was 16, but before that had caused a lot of grief in my life, and that never came out until I was in, a later teenager myself. And it was only during my teenage years that I actually remembered what had happened, and she'd inappropriately touched me on a number of occasions and asked me to do things that I shouldn't have as her sister. And remembering this as a teenager, what really struck me was that, this sister of mine, she's now passed on. She passed on during COVID. And then remarkably, she's also the catalyst for my book, which I'll talk about at the end of this, or part of the end of this journey. But she ran away when I said, when she was 16, so I was about 10, but She kept contact with the family by basically conning people to give her money and saying she was sent, they'd send her home on a Greyhound bus, right? In North America, they were Greyhound buses. And she'd never come home, but we'd get a phone call from the people who had given her money. And that was her way of keeping us in touch. But what I witnessed was my mom's heartbreaking over and over and over again at the loss of her daughter in that sense. And then also me suffering because knowing what she had done to me. And seeing how she broke my mom's heart, and yet I would get yelled at for not doing the dishes right. So it was this really weird dynamic of seeing my sister, who was causing so much harm, anytime she did come home, get, of course, received with open arms and lots of love, only to either rob us and leave in a few days or something like that and just break my mom's heart over again. So I think I was about 16, 17, and I just couldn't take it anymore, Letitia. I couldn't keep getting yelled at for silly things or what I thought were silly things, and seeing this sister of mine just do all of these heartbreaking activities and keep getting forgiven and forgiven. And of course, that's love, right? And that's my mom for loving her, and I cannot fault her for that either, right? But during that time, it hurt like hell. And so I told my brother, he happened to be home. And my two brothers and the three sisters, and my brother at that time was home, and I ended up telling my mom, and or I told my brother first, and then he and I went to my mom and told her, and of course she was devastated. How could she not be? I don't think any parent wants to find out that your two of your children have done this, or this has happened with two of your children. But what continued with this again was my mom's non-acceptance of how it impacted me and how I suffered. I think I was the second year university, so this is probably about 3 years after I told my mother about it. I was meant to visit the family at Christmas and stuff, and my mom wanted to go see this particular sister, and I didn't. And my mom basically slapped me, told me I should have been over it by now, and I'm ruining her Christmas. Why can't I suck it up and go just spend this time? And that led me, that whole reaction and the inability to just suck it up led me to dropping out of, not dropping out, but taking the next semester of university off, almost having a nervous breakdown and often contemplating suicide because I just couldn't cope. I couldn't go out of my dorm room. Couldn't obviously attend classes. And so finally I stopped and healed a bit with my mother that year. But I'm not going to lie, Chantel, that my sister who had done this to me over the next years did so much more that there's just not time in this show to go through the amount of continuous trauma that was felt through this woman. Ended when she died, like I said, in 2020. So there's so much more in my family life that happened, but again, it's not my story necessarily to tell. That's probably the biggest story of trauma. The brother who went to drugs and drug dealing died when he was 21, so I'd had that trauma. Every man, my younger brother or my elder younger brother, older younger brother, he went away to boarding school when I was like 10. So all the men left in my life, right? So there was this always this sense of abandonment through the male figure, and that showed up later in my relationships. But I don't want to fast forward through healing because there's many years that this did impact me, and the way that my mom showed her love was very narcissistic. I dated a lot of narcissistic men, had horrible relationships in that sense. I'm just going to take a drink of water, excuse me. But not only that, it was like, how did I treat myself, right? I didn't treat myself very well. That's because I didn't believe I deserved to be, right? I didn't deserve to be loved. My love had to be proven with how hard I worked, hence the high achieving, the nonstop, go, 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 things like that. I had to prove I was worthy through doing things, fixing things, all of that stuff. And that just became living in this survival mode through so many years. And what started the journey of healing was a literal walk into a pole. And I detail this in my book, Living in Love. And it was, many years ago, probably about almost 9, 10 years ago now, and I was reading the news on my phone and I literally just walked into a pole so hard. I left a massive bump on my head. And that started the whole journey. I didn't even know what self-love was at that point, but I started listening to how I spoke to myself. And what really struck me was when I struck myself with that pole and I went home and I looked in my eyes, I saw such dissatisfaction. I'd gotten places, I'd moved from Canada to the UK. Before that, I moved to Turkey, moved from Turkey to the UK, sorry. And then, things were going well, got a career, all of that, but I wasn't happy. And then it just kind of dawned on me, like, what could I possibly do to change my life into a life that I love? And the first thing that came to me was meditate, but after that, it was really, really focusing on how I spoke to myself, because I didn't speak to myself very kindly. And so that was one of the biggest things that helped me change. And then, that journey was, I did a lot of tapping. I worked with that, so trying to soothe my nervous system, things like that as well. I, soaked up any sort of information on just self-development, affirmations, mirror work, Louise Hay's mirror work, and stuff like that I got into. And, I kind of reached a plateau. And that's when my sister, the very sister who did so much, wreaked so much havoc in my life and the life of our family, actually gave me one of the biggest gifts I could have ever asked for. And, years previous to that, in fact, the last time I saw my mother and my sister alive, I told them both that I forgave my sister. And that was a massive gift. It took a lot for me to do that. And don't think I forgave her and just went, well, that was fine. No, it continued. Right? It's a process. It's not a one night, one time thing. It's an ongoing thing. And some days were easier than others. But mostly it was like I just didn't want that power to be held over me anymore. I made that choice to just say, I'm worthy enough to let this go and live a good life. And I need to forgive her to do that. And I did it. I'm not gonna lie, I did it more for my mom and her, but I did do it for myself as well because I knew the freedom that would come. But then fast forward to 2020 and COVID hits and that sister dies. And of course, I can't go home. I can't go grieve with my family. And like I said, it was like an end of an era. She didn't just impact my life, she impacted every member of my family in a very difficult and harsh way in her way. Like all sorts of things happened that just takes far too much time to discuss. But I couldn't write after she died, and I was just starting my book. I, started chapter one about 10 times, and I knew I wanted it to be about love, but I didn't know what kind of love. And I didn't want it to be a, oh, woe is me book of, oh, I suffered so much and da da. So I wanted it to be empowering. So after, a few weeks of not being able to write, I just finally said to myself, okay, you're going to write today. And I took my notebook out into the backyard and I sat there and I tried and nothing came. And finally, I asked myself, Kalinda, what do you want to be and what do you want this book to be? And the answers flew to me very quickly. It was, I want to be love and I want this book to bring love. And I honestly think that if I hadn't necessarily been going through that grief of the death of my sister and the end of this era and the family of her passing, I probably would have, just carried on trying different things, but I don't know if I ever would have asked myself those questions. And that's really what began the entire, or not began, but that's what culminated the journey of just starting to put love into action. And that became the challenge I gave myself to do 10 acts of love per day for 31 days. And that's ultimately what changed my life and broke so much of survival mode. It was putting simple acts of love into action every day for myself, for others, and just to raise my vibration. And because of that, I now believe and know in my heart that love has the power to change the world, and so do simple acts of love.
Thank you for sharing. And that was a difficult journey for you. I know prior to the us recording, you expressed that, you were a bit nervous about sharing certain parts of your story. And I appreciate that you were able to do so. You and I have had previous discussion about self-love and love in general. And one of the things that I've talked about on this podcast is in this space, we are told to love ourselves, and no one teaches us how. It's as if we are expected to know because it's something that we should be doing anyway. But a lot of us have journeyed through life And self-love has been a buzzword, not a way of life. So, someone listening to this, what is the first steps in being able to get to that place of prioritizing self-love in our lives?
I think, it depends where you're at already, right? But it's not necessarily always easy to love ourselves, and some people find it more difficult than others. So I think it's start with something that feels maybe slightly out of your comfort zone, not too far pushing that it's going to be too much that you will resist it. For example, when I was doing Louise Hay's mirror work, which is basically to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I love you into your eyes. It took weeks before I believed it, but I did it. I stuck with it. And I think part of it is that I reached an area or a time in my life where I was like, enough's enough. We're here to feel good. And I believe, and maybe I didn't know it consciously, but in my subconscious, I knew it because that's what pushed me along, is that we are love. So even if you can't love yourself fully yet, or even, feel like, what do I even do to start that? Think. As a whole, as a human race, as an entire system on this planet and the universe, love is all uniting and everywhere. It is omnipresent. It is the strongest force, I believe, out there. And it's what connects everything. So if you can't take it down to the individual, just remember you are part of this whole, and this whole is love. So just by being, you are love and you are worthy of love. And if that's really difficult to get through your head and your heart, then try and do something loving for yourself, like even little. Just, I call them luscious, luxurious love moments. And I try to do a couple of them every day. And it's those moments that you're just like, that makes me feel like really good. If you love baths, make one extra long. If you love like your cup of tea with your robe still on and you're cozy, then sip it with intention. Right? Just make those moments even more conscious and deliberate, but loving for you. And then just see how your body helps rewire your brain.
Whenever I talk about accident survival mode, I always say it happens in three phases. The first is self-awareness. We can change what we cannot see. The second is reprogramming, being able to challenge our narratives, our belief systems, our conditioning as well. And then the third is a reinvention. I don't believe that we can go back to who we were before the trauma. It's learning to live with the trauma and deciding who we will be without the trauma label is what I believe reinvention to be. One of the things that you spoke about was that desirability piece. And for a lot of people, we don't believe that we deserve love because of the experiences that we've had, because of the trauma that we've experienced, or whatever else. It often is very hard for us to come to that realization that it doesn't matter what we've been through, what we've experienced, we do deserve love. What would you say is something someone can do to build on their desirability and their self-worth? Because I think that tends to be a huge barrier for a lot of people, especially if they have dealt with compounded trauma since childhood.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's huge. I think, again, it depends on each and every person. But like you said, the first stage is often self-awareness, right? So how are you talking to yourself? How are you, what are you saying to yourself? Is there even just the slightest thing that you can change? Or for example, if you want to try and say, I love you to yourself, but you're looking in the mirror and it's just like, no bloody way am I going to utter those words? Then you say something like, I'm ready to be loved. Other people love me. Why can't I love me? The power of asking ourselves a question too, like an empowering question, like, why aren't I lovable? Like often it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, you are, or why are, what, how, that came out wrong. Asking a question in the sense of like, well, why not me? Like, why can't I be lovable? And maybe that may trigger some bad responses, but it can also trigger the response, like, because your brain's going to be like, well, actually, yeah, you are. Like, there is nothing wrong. So I think self-awareness is one of the first bits, but It's not going to necessarily be easy. It isn't. There was very difficult days for me, but I'll tell you one thing that helped me a lot was meditation. And that helps you get out of here and drop into your heart. But even some people are like, well, I can't sit for moments or, hours or however long and just try and still my mind when I've got all these thoughts racing. So a very quick one to do is to just drop into your heart simply by breathing in and out of it and slowing your breath. Because part of what we suffer is also suffered in our thoughts, right? So if we can get out of our brain and into the heart, that also helps as well. And also sometimes we need to find support. We may not be able to do this on our own, and that's okay, right? It's more than okay to reach out to people who know can help you.
I believe in support wholeheartedly, and community is really what helps us to get through, especially in the healing process. But what you mentioned earlier was the difference between affirmations and affirmations, right? And a lot of people are unaware of the affirmations. So affirmations are positive declarations, which we can say to ourselves to help reprogram our subconscious. Affirmations are positive, empowering questions. And for me, as someone who had to work heavily on my desirability, because I, like yourself, didn't necessarily believe that I was worthy of love because of what I went through with my parents, I struggled initially with affirmations, like being so bold, I am worthy of love. And someone introduced me to affirmations. And instead of saying, I am worthy of love, I would start saying, why am I worthy of love? And like you said, our subconscious brain cannot resist the question. And what that started doing, me saying it over and my brain unable to resist, it started presenting me with evidence of why I was worthy of love. And eventually I started believing it because I could see, like, it was giving me these clear signs, clear evidence of why I was worthy, which then had me believing more so that I was worthy. So now, when I say I am worthy of love, I know that I am, but it came on the back of me asking myself affirming questions, right? And I loved how you switched it a bit. Because initially, when you said the question, it was slightly on the negative side, and then you
That's right.
switched it, right? It's important to remember that our questions are highly important. If we focus on the negative, we will get negative evidence to support. So when we are asking ourselves questions, we have to ask from a positive perspective so that the evidence that we receive is also positive.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I realized that after I too, I'd asked the question. I was like, oh, it's got to be positive because that's it. Your brain will respond.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that, I've mentioned this on another podcast. Another word that was very important during my healing journey was yet, right? Like, I might feel negative about something, or like I might say, oh, an affirmation may be, I don't know, in my business, I'm making 5K. Just for instance, I'm making 5K. I'm a coach that is bringing in 5K, and I know that not to be true. So I would say, I may not yet be bringing in 5K, but I am preparing for that, right? Yet opens up possibility where sometimes when we are in a space where we haven't yet managed to navigate our trauma or n navigate differently the stories and beliefs that we hold for ourselves, we have to do things almost to jumpstart the process. And that begins with being open to different possibilities. And I
Absolutely.
believe what you say about acts of love, it opens us up to so much more, because a lot of times we're dealing with self-hatred, which then has us having a very negative view of the world and our experiences. And to be able to switch that from self-hatred to self-love, or I'm now more open because I love myself and I'm coming. It changes my outlook on life, right? Like, life doesn't change, just my outlook, just my perspective, when I am flourishing myself from the inside out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's so true. And one of the things I love the word yet. That's a good one. I'm going to start using that as well. And one of the phrases I love, when you're just not quite feeling it or you're not ready there yet, and you say that affirmation perhaps, but it doesn't stick. It's not true and you just know it. I like saying, I'm ready to be ready to do this, because then it's opening that possibility up, but it's also honest that you're not there yet, but you're ready to be there yet. And it just gives it a bit more playful as well. So I think, it's a difficult journey to navigate, and with trauma and healing from it, it can be ongoing sometimes, but it can get so much easier. But honestly, like just even months ago, I was swimming. It's one of my favorite activities to do, and I'm fortunate to live on the South Coast, so by the sea. And for some reason, I was just envisioning stuff falling off of me, right? Limiting beliefs, things I didn't need anymore. And all of a sudden, this trauma that I thought I'd released, I realized, no, I was still sticking with it. There was still the trauma of my brother dying, still the trauma of this, still the trauma of that. And I was like, Kalinda, what are you holding on to it for? So even that far in my healing journey and feeling good and very good self-love for myself, I was still seeing that there was bits that I was still holding on to. And sometimes that can come, at least for me, it did, was because this was final letting go, like you said, reinvention. But you're also letting go of that past you, and sometimes that can be difficult. And we still hold on to things even when they're not good for us. So I just stayed in the water a bit longer and allowed myself to release more, release that trauma.
Releasing is so important, and a lot of us are resistant to it because it almost feels like we're choosing to forget. And it's not that, it's just, I believe that trauma is very similar to grief in the fact that people believe that after a certain point in time, you stop grieving, and you don't. You grieve forever. However, the amount of space in your day that grief takes up lessens over time. And I think it's the same with trauma. Yes, we can release that trauma from our body. We can work very actively on changing our narratives and rewriting our stories and choosing who we are differently. However, the remnants of that trauma always remain, and it becomes part of who we are. And as we know now, that trauma can change us at a DNA level. So we have to learn how to manage it so that it's not in control. Excuse me. Which is why the healing process is always ongoing. We can think that we have gotten past things, we've worked through our triggers, we are really focused on ourselves. And then, out of the blue, one day, we are stalled because of something that we thought we let go. And it's just being able to work through the residual impacts, work through those remnants that will remain regardless, because we can't. I mean, unless we find a man in black that can wipe our memory. Like, the reality is it's still embedded in our subconscious, and it's just like we have to manage grief, we have to also manage our trauma so that it's not at the surface all the time, so that we aren't people pleasing, so that we aren't fixing, so that we aren't overachieving, so that we feel validated and accepted by others, right? It changes how we view the world, but we also have the power to change the way that we view the world after that. So which is why healing, like anchoring into our healing and recognizing that it goes on and on and on. You sometimes we find new triggers, but it just being committed to the journey rather than letting it stall us, because you could have said, well, gosh, I thought I let this go. I'm gonna sit in this. And you chose not to, right? I think acceptance is such a huge part of healing, and people are so resistant to that word because they think it is the same as condoning, and it's not. It's just being able to give ourselves grace that this is what we experience, and perhaps this is what created our responses, but we also have the power to change that.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I think part of it is I like to the idea of integrating. I don't want to, I mean, yes, I don't want the trauma to overtake me or to continue to or put me back into survival mode, right? I worked through that. I continue to work through still dealing with things like that. But what also is that it's the admittance, not the admittance, but I guess the awareness that this also shaped me. I'm not here today as I am today because that didn't happen, or, you know, if it didn't happen, who knows, right? I wouldn't be where I am. And, you know, there's certain aspects of it that I am grateful for. There's certain bits, not everything, but certain bits in my life that I am. Because again, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't have created the book I created. I would have created the methodology to put love into action, to make loving yourself, you know, maybe not easier, but simpler. And that's why I really love like the tools I created. For me, it helped me dearly with my mom's passing and grieving. Like you said, they're similar. Like they're not cyclical, or they're up and down and they're messy and it's dirty, and grieving and dealing with trauma is that's the way it is. Some days it's really easy, and some days it can be very difficult. But for me, what really helped was using what I call my love actions. So those things that I did throughout those 31 days in the challenge, those, you know, putting love into action, is it wasn't just for me. One of them was hugging myself. That gave me great comfort, right? And helps with your nervous system, calm your nervous system. But other things were sending love to other people, sending 5 messages a day to friends, family, or even people I just saw on the street if it was appropriate. And that helped me. And part of what I like to do with being more conscious and deliberate in doing loving things for others and yourself is that it just raises your vibration. You feel better. And like you said too, when you feel better and you have these different emotions and these more positive feelings, you do see the world in a different way. The world perceives you in a different way. And so you encounter new things. And sometimes the heavy lifting of the trauma or the deservedness and the worthiness can be a little easier when you're feeling a little better. So you don't necessarily have to love yourself to start doing self-loving things. It will come. And, you know, the more I do research into the brain and the heart connection and the way we can rewire our brain through doing loving things, it's just becoming more and more evident that for me, that's the way to go forward. And I don't do all 10 acts of love per day every day anymore. I do probably about 5 or 6 for myself, but I also reach into my toolbox and I pull those out whenever I need it. And I'll tell you one thing that I found. The easiest way to make yourself feel better or to deal with grief, or perhaps, you know, you get triggered, is to send that love out, because that love will come back to you, right? And that's beautiful in itself. But also, when you're sharing that love with others, you just feel better.
Absolutely. I have truly enjoyed this conversation, Kalinda.
Oh, me too.
Tell us a bit more about how we can connect with you online.
Yeah, sure, certainly. So I'm mostly on LinkedIn. That's my number one platform, and that's just Kalinda Latour. I'm the only Kalinda Latour on there, as far as I'm aware. My website is again www.kalindalatour.com. I do have a YouTube channel called Living in Love with Kalinda, and basically, as well, I've got my book, which is on Amazon and other online shops. And come September, not too far away, I will be launching the Living in Love movement, which is a free movement to help get me to that goal of 10 million acts of love. And I will be posting about that on LinkedIn.
That is exciting. I can't wait to hear more
Oh,
about
I'm so
it.
excited for
Thank
this.
you so much for your time on Survival Mode, Kalinda. But before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway for the audience to action.
I think it is put love into action, whether it's for yourself or for others. Try to do it daily, one act of love per day, and just see the changes in your life and the life of those around you.
Absolutely. Thank you again for your time on Survival Mode and audience. Thank you for catching another episode. I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I'll see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.